Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Good afternoon from Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bektesh. This is Valley Roundup. Today, it's in the people's hands now. A new Lift One measure is on the ballot. And we now have two top executive positions open in Aspen government. What does this mean for the incoming mayor? Speaking of which, election season is underway. Those stories and more coming up this half hour. Joining me today in the studio are Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News. Curtis, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me on the program.
Carolyn Zachariasen, reporter with the Aspen Times. Carolyn, it's so good to have you here.
Thank you.
And Roger Merle, columnist with the Aspen Times. Roger, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Stay tuned. Carolyn, I want to start with you. 1A will be on the ballot, but not exactly like, do we want a new lift? That's not the question. What is the public actually being asked?
The public is being asked to approve two ordinances that combined are 88 pages long. It asks everything from rezoning a piece of property that the ski company owns where the Gorsuch House, it's a hotel, 81-room hotel, would go at the base of Aspen Mountain's western side. From anything from rezoning to changing the use of a city-owned parcel, it's asking to approve over 300,000 square feet of developable commercial space. And the city council on Monday, they approved referring that to the voters instead of voting on it itself.
Okay.
So then it doesn't open it up for litigation to the government. So it would be an action by the voters.
So the city council could have said, yes, we approve this application, and we'll send it to the voters because it gets kicked there either way. But they said, we don't want to make a call on it. We just want the public to say.
Correct.
Okay.
So, and the mayor was against that. Mayor Steve Scadron was like, this is our job. Our job is to approve land use ordinances. And then if the voters want to weigh in on it, great, to reaffirm that. And then they also had a discussion about, let's have two separate questions. One on the 88 pages of the nuance of redevelopment of a base of a mountain, but also the $4.36 million that the city has agreed to give the developers to build a ski museum. But everybody in the room was like, well, that's not going to pass.
Wow.
So let's just keep it in the regular in one question. So it's like, well, if you don't think it's going to pass, why are you guys giving the money away?
Yeah. That seems like a trick to the voters, and that came up in the forum last night. We'll get to that later. Curtis, are the voters going to be able to get through 88 pages and understand what they're voting on?
I don't think so. So, you know, the bright, shiny object here is, in fact, the new chairlift. And we started, you know, this has been a long, long time coming, but about a year ago, we were in this place where we were told that there would be a new chairlift that would come all the way down into town, three blocks lower than the current lift. And that's sort of seen as this unassailable good thing. It's bringing the lift back down to town. And we all love that. And if you would have asked me when that happened, you know, when this project goes to voters, is it going to pass? I would have said, absolutely, 85%. And I think what's happened is that through this land use approval process for, you know, for these two hotels, we've learned a lot of things. We've learned that it's 300,000 square feet of development. It's massive new development going on that accompanies this chairlift. And there's a couple things about it. You know, these guys came in and used every trick in the book to get their housing mitigation down into like the 30% range when normally it's 65%. You know, they correctly point out this, that the city's land use code has incentives to build lodging. If you build a certain amount of, units per lot area. You know, they want high density lodging. You know, they don't want these. So they build enough lodge rooms. If they're around 5,000 or 500 square feet, then you get these breaks on the affordable housing. And so instead of a 65% mitigation rate, they're going to come in at like a 35% mitigation rate. And you know what? The voters aren't going to really they're not going to care that the city's land use code has these incentives in there. They're just going to say, well, where's the housing? So I think they had a really good strategy for getting through the city council mm-hmm. and getting a land use approval that had minimal housing and a 4 million plus taxpayer subsidy contribution. Like, that worked at the city council. Whether or not that's going to fly with the voters, I think, is a different question. And I really feel like it's two different ball games that I don't know if they've tailored their message. You know, they got it through the council. Is it going to pass the voters? I don't know.
It's so interesting. Like, just because it's allowed, you're admitting that you're going to create more employees than you're going to provide housing for. Where are we going to put those people?
Right, yeah, not just more employees you're going to provide housing for, but more, you know, you're mitigating at a lower level than what commercial projects normally are required to do. And I mean, not only that, I mean, there's a total of two or three on-site units. Everything else is TBD.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to buy the housing credit certificates from Fornell or some other developer. You know, maybe they're going to buy some land and build actual housing that they can actually use for their employees, but we don't know. And they don't have to tell us. They don't have to have this established until the hotels are built. That could be 10 years from now.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, they have to do an audit.
Right.
That's one of the things you'll see in the 88-page ordinances, is that there will be an audit in, I think, 2 years after they're open.
How many employees they actually had.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Roger, what do you think about Curtis's point that had we split these two things up, if it was just let's get a new lift mm-hmm. and then also do we want hotels there, would that have been a different story than the fact that they're all tied together now?
I think it absolutely would have been a different story. The lift was the big thing for me when I first saw this project, and they were actually going to move the lift up the hill for Gorsuch House. I thought that is the most ridiculous thing I ever heard of. You know, it's a big hotel, plus they're moving the lift up. And my mind was changed when they straightened out the hotel so the lift could come down. And I thought, well, I can get behind that mm-hmm. now. But Curtis brings up a good point with the employee housing. Mm-hmm. This thing was sold to us as this great benefit to the community, that it's going to not just benefit the developers, but the entire town. So they're, in essence, they're telling me there that they're going to generate more jobs for more employees. And so there, mm-hmm. I mean, we should have considered that, too, when we decided, or we haven't decided yet, but when they cut back on their employee housing mitigation, I thought, well, that's kind of crazy. You know, they're building this huge economic generator mm-hmm. and cutting back on that employee housing. And that's usually a deal killer in this town, as we all know.
I mean, I do think it's a good thing. I think that's good that you'll be able to get on a chairlift and ride up Aspen Mountain from Dean Street. It sort of takes a whole chunk of town and turns it into slope side accommodations, and it's going to be great. You know, we've already heard stories about how certain properties over there are seeing increases in their value, or people trying to flip them for more money because they're going to be next door to this chairlift now. And so yeah, and it does in the end generate more jobs. But I think it's a good public infrastructure project to have a lower chairlift. And so the developers are arguing basically that, well, because we're doing this good thing over here, you know, we're going to take a little back over here on the employee housing and the public subsidy. Like, that's the trade that y'all are making by making, you know, by forcing us to bring the chairlift down the hill, which is kind of what happened.
Well, I felt a little sucker punched by that too, because they got the big public buy-in mm-hmm. on moving the lift down and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And when they got that, then they announced, or they started asking for stuff.
Right. It wasn't until we got deep into the morass of the land use approval project that we had to start teasing out what the actual housing mitigation rate is, what they were asking for from the city. Like that, yeah, like that stuff didn't come out till this fall, until we were in the middle of the council process.
You know, and that was probably a strategic thing on their part to get that big buy-in before they...
Well, that doesn't feel good.
No.
Do you have a sense, Roger? Do you think this will pass?
I don't know. I was, like Curtis said, I was, originally I thought it would pass easily, but I'm not sure now. That big ask is... I think it will change people's minds.
I think it would if they were coming in at full housing and they didn't have the public subsidy, but I'm worried that that's going to be enough to turn off enough people that its chances are slim.
If it doesn't pass, do they get a try again?
Sure. I mean, they could, I suppose.
Yeah. More housing.
That's really interesting parlor game of what happens if this loses. And there's a number of different scenarios. The Lift One Lodge has an approval it's sitting on, so that could be built.
Okay.
The approval that they have does not have the lower chairlift. You couldn't build a lower chairlift because the corridor between the buildings is too narrow. But Gorsuch House would be back to square one. That does not have a land use approval. And that's kind of becoming the tougher sell in a lot of ways, because that's the parcel that has to be rezoned from what's now sheep pasture and ski trails to, 40-foot high-density lodging. And it's kind of interesting. A lot of people are like, well, just forget about the Gorsuch House. Let's just approve the Lift One Lodge with the lower lift. And unfortunately, it's not that simple because, as Roger indicated earlier, originally, the lift sits on where the Gorsuch House will be, if this passes. So it's all tied together. It's kind of a package deal. If this doesn't pass, who knows what's going to happen? It's probably nothing for a while.
It's no secret that you are an Aspen Mountain fan. What does this mean for skiing? If it really does all go through and we have this very accessible lift that, detachable high speed or some kind of version of this fun new technology on the side that is the local side it's annoying a lift, because it's hard to get to.
That's going to be interesting, and I don't know, because it seems like our visitors don't really like that side of the mountain. I don't think it's because it's not accessible, because you access the skiing from the top,
right,
not from town. And nonetheless, people ski down Ruthie's and then they sort of skid and slide and make their way back to Little Nell. So I don't know if that will change all that much. I mean, I know the developers think it will and mm-hmm. hope it will, but I'm not convinced. It's the more difficult side of the mountain to ski, right, for sure.
Let me also point out that, this is the side where World Cup Racing used to be. And the ski company says that they're very interested in having World Cup skiing, and if they were that interested, maybe they wouldn't put a chairlift over on Side Country in Pandora and put an actual lift where they need it.
Yeah.
And I find that, I don't know.
I always wondered why Ski Company wasn't more on board with bringing the lift down just for the sake of the limelight. It brings, a base within half a block of the limelight, which seems like it would be a pretty good thing for the limelight and the ski company.
With this, they're kind of getting a lift built for them by giving away the land that they have there.
Yeah.
Right, they are.
Gorsuch is paying for it.
Gorsuch is basically paying for the lifts, and I guess that's your prerogative if you can get that done, if you're the ski company. I think they always wanted the lift to come down the hill, but they weren't willing to do it without getting this development along with it and getting someone else to pay for it.
I can guarantee you that the campaign between now and March 5th We'll focus on that lift. You want World Cup Racing back?
Mm-hmm.
You want a chairlift? Those are it.
Vote yes.
Don't,
how
don't
could you vote no on World Cup? What's wrong with you?
50-foot tall buildings, not on.
Don't worry. Yeah, forget about that. Don't worry about that.
Monday was interesting for another reason as well. Prior to the conversation about the ballot language, there was an executive session where once the council came out, we were informed that Steve Barwick was asked to resign and said yes. So is that a fancy word for fired?
Yeah. It is.
Let's start with Barry Crook, who retired early in December, and that outburst. Carolyn and Curtis, you've both reported on that, because they seem tied together.
Yeah. So first, that meeting on Monday, they had to rush through that executive session so they could get to this really important land use decision that they were making, or at least referring to the voters. So some council members feel pretty rushed going through that resignation process. I think how it really went down was, we have some serious issues with our city manager. We need to talk to you about that, city manager. And he said, let's just call a spade, and I'm out. And I want a year's severance and X, Y, and Z. And so, and it was all kind of resting on, the outreach of city government in the last year. And Barry Crook happened to be he's the assistant city manager, or was, and he was the trigger. And I think maybe the straw that broke the camel's back when he didn't like what the local housing board had wanted to participate in a public-private partnership to build 45 rental units. They wanted some costs covered mm-hmm. in their administrative role in managing these properties. And Barry was informed of that after the meeting that the APSHA board had, and he couldn't control himself, and within earshot of other public officials, he called them MF extortionists. And, you know, you do that in a corporate boardroom or in any other work environment, you're out. And so that's what happened. And then, you know, they just start falling from there. So, you know, his boss is the next.
Barry's been there, was he there 10 years? And, you know, when you ask people what they thought of him, they would say he's great to have on your side, but he's kind of a fighter. You know, he really, like, he would fight hard for what he perceived to be the city's interests, perhaps at the expense of consensus building with community members that may have interests that are different.
Well put. He also is, you know, Barwick's strong arm. I mean, he was Barwick's bully. He knew that, you know, Barry was getting close to retirement, so it's not something that he had to worry about being him getting promoted or, you know, he could kind of behave badly.
I mean, even as press, Barry was who you go to for almost every question. Like, you don't go to Steve for a lot. He was kind of hidden, I think, the string pulling, puppeteering. Do you think it's a fair fair to put those together, though? Like, did Steve have his own problems, or was his resignation based on Barry?
I mean, Barry's problem is Steve's problem, ultimately, because the buck stops with the city manager, and that's what a lot of council members said. I do think Steve could have perhaps saved his job. What my reading of the situation after talking with council members is that he lost Ward, who was kind of the swing vote in this decision, after the Barry blow-up happened, and city council members then went to the next APSHA board meeting and apologized.
Yeah.
Because there was no apology that came from the city manager's office. And that really alienated some council members who thought, like, this, you know, we needed to hear some cleanup, some mop up from directly from the source. And when that didn't happen, I think that was kind of the last straw when the majority of that board decided they were ready for change at the city manager level.
And it just had to be a majority vote on city council. 3 of the 5 needed to say yes.
Correct.
So you spoke with Ann Mullins, who either said no or felt really uncomfortable with the process.
She felt that it was too rushed of a decision, that it wasn't thought through well enough, you know, that she was not on board, at least not yet. You know, she said she had some issues with Steve, but she also saw that he brought a lot of value to the council. You know, there's an interesting tie-in with the Lift One Lodge. As we've said here on this program just now, you didn't always hear a lot from Steve Barwick, but he made a really extraordinary step of writing a 5-page memo, kind of picking apart the public subsidy ask that the developers put forward on the Lift One Lodge. And for a lot of people, that was his finest hour.
Yeah, I would actually agree with
you know, and so he did speak up on something, and he really did raise his voice and say some things that a lot of people found very interesting and frankly very compelling.
However, it wasn't heard; it went on deaf ears.
It did. What do you know? It fell on deaf ears.
Is it appropriate for us to know who voted what in an executive session like that?
It's funny when you ask me, like, well, I can't reveal what happened in an executive session, but I will tell you, blah, 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 blah.
No, but this is an unusual circumstance. Yeah. It's not every day that the city council gets rid of their city manager, and the public has a right to know and ought to know who's falling down on where. And let's remember that Ann's running for mayor.
Well, yeah, so I'm going to
so is Adam.
Break here now, but that's exactly what we're going to get into with this campaign strategy and that Ann maybe wanted the people to know how she voted. Stay with us. You are listening to Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Joining me today are Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, Carolyn Sakharyson, reporter with the Aspen Times, and Roger Merolt, columnist with the Aspen Times. So let's talk about the campaign season, which ties into both of these discussions. First of all, we're going to vote in March, and I'm curious as to how that ski season being a present will affect a ski season type ballot measure for the first time. But let's talk about the candidates. We have four running for two open council seats, and we have four running for one open mayoral seat. So eight candidates. They all met together last night in what they call like a casual candidate-led discussion. And I'm curious about your feelings about that. Carolyn, I'll start with you.
Well, you don't see any headlines about it, do you?
Right.
Well, and I'd say that kind of in jest. I mean, I think we had other things that we had to do on Thursday night to cover it. But, it's something new, and I think that there's some implicit bias going on right away off the bat when it's candidate produced. It's self-serving to a certain extent. There was a little bit of controversy at the outset with the main organizer, Skippy Mesereau, who invited half the field and then after the fact invited the other half after he set up the topics, where it was going to be, asked them for $100 each.
Wow.
You know, and the other candidates were, felt pretty slighted, and it didn't start off very well. And then, of course, the topic is outreach. It's like you've already fumbled that, So that's how it started off. And so I'm curious from your standpoint, what you heard and what you saw, because we weren't there.
It was a 2-hour, first of all, forum that was standing room only in the Aspen Police Department community room. Round circle and chairs, and anyone could ask anyone questions. So candidate on candidate or anyone in the audience. I wasn't there for the whole time. I will say, so first it was mayoral candidates, then all eight together talking, and then just council was the format. Once Skippy did sit up there and join in, it felt like he was the moderator to me. It did feel like that was what he wanted. So you can tell who's doing it and why. I will say, though, also, I didn't differentiate much from the candidates in this discussion. I think it was a lot of crowd pleasing, mm-hmm. and maybe they're not all that different in something like we should work on outreach. that's a pretty easy, that's not very controversial. So that was a lot of time for, and the people in the audience are the people who you see in the audience of city council meetings. They are the most engaged. So I was thinking about it this morning. This is supposed to be better for the voter, but you didn't really go to the voter with this,
I mean, I thought when it came out in the initial announcement that Skippy wanted to do this, so you can really get to know the candidates. And by the way, Squirm Night is too stale. He didn't say Squirm Night, but he said the current slate of forums, which—
Yeah, whether it's the Chamber of Commerce or the media.
Which, is headlined by what the media puts together and what the Chamber does, are stale and impersonal. Which just kind of made it, they're too Q&A, they're too gotcha oriented. So it's like, this is going to be like an easier, this is going to be more of a softball for us. And I don't know if who's that serving?
Right.
Them.
Yeah. It seems a little early too, no matter how it came
out. Yeah, well, that's the consequence of our decision to move the election to March 5th, where we're actually going to get ballots by Valentine's Day, which is in like a month. So
it's a condensed campaign season.
It's definitely a condensed campaign season, which a lot of people would argue is a good thing. Like we don't need 3 months of an election for our little city government. So
I would be in that camp, I think. Yeah. It still just seems like, Squirm Night is much closer to the time we're actually filling out ballots. Nice. And the Q&A that is, in his words, out to get you or gotcha. That's what people want to know, I think.
Right. We want to know. It's like we ask a lot of questions. We do Q&A because we want to know what you're going to do when you get elected. Like mm-hmm. we don't care so much about
Well, let's see how they react under pressure too.
Yeah.
Was a Q&A. I mean, this was a forum. Right. So that was that language is, this is exactly what you would do at any candidate forum. It's just that you're the host, essentially. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I will give Skippy some credit for the idea. I think that's great. Like, let's get more discussion. Let's get more exposure. Let's learn who these candidates are, and maybe there is a place for a little more informal setting. And I think it's great that getting everybody in the same room, because any input is going to help voters make their decision. But it's just a little hard to swallow when it's coming from a candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys see any of the candidates separating themselves out in any ways? Do you see any interesting slogans or any interesting kind of moves on? It's a big field.
It is a big field. I'd say Skippy has done a good job setting himself apart. I mean, almost continually since the last election cycle, where he just is the different guy, the new ideas, the young candidate. So I think he's done a good job of that. Tory, we know what he's all about. Ann Mullins, we know what she's about.
Rachel Richards, she served for a long time on city council in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So, and so did Tory. So if you want to go back to the 90s, you can do that.
Don't we all?
Right. Or if there's fresh faces, you know, Linda Manning, for instance, you know, that's a really interesting one. She's the city clerk. She's making $90,000 a year. She sees it from both sides, you know, from a staff perspective and as somebody who sits there and watches the city council. And she just no longer can keep quiet in what she sees. So I think she has a lot of interesting things to say that are going to be different than what your incumbents like Burt Myron have to say. He's always the single vote.
Right.
And mm-hmm. we'll see whether that he can carry that forward.
As far as the mayors, whoever is elected will come in presumably with no city manager or assistant city manager in place, maybe an interim from Sarah Ott. What is that going to look like? I mean, what is that relationship supposed to be, and what does it look like when we're missing that?
That was one of the reasons why Ann said she was uncomfortable with the decision, like, because there is this kind of leadership vacuum that's now occurring that this new council is going to have to. One interesting thing about all this, because we moved the election up 2 months, when this last council was elected in 2017, they served through June. And so that still is happening. So we're going to have a 3-month lame duck city council session. Mm-hmm.
However, they're going to have to find a city manager.
No way, not a chance.
To hand off to.
Not a chance.
Yeah.
City manager is going to come in and be hired by one city council that's going to turn over in June, and the new city council can fire them if they don't like it. I'm sort of hearing that it's not they're not trying to have the new city manager hired before the new council's seated.
6 months without leadership then.
6 months with some sort of interim transitional program, which they're still working on. And you'd have to think that they'll have an interim city. They're going to have an interim assistant city manager.
Mm-hmm. Well, which is presumably Sarah Ott, who's assistant city manager now.
Well, and that's probably the great lead question for the candidates is how are you going to react to the situation? And it probably favors the candidates with more experience in local politics.
And I think the mayoral race is fascinating because you have two experienced count. You know, you have two people who have been elected twice to city council. I guess three people that have been elected twice to city council when you count Tory.
One with nothing to risk. You know, Anne's in midterm right now. So if she doesn't get the mayoral position, she stays on city council. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, that's true. But if she wins, then we're picking a third council seat. We're going to have to appoint someone to her council seat. So that's something to consider.
Let's end on the fun weekend coming up. Winter school, I call it Aspen's homecoming. So are you guys going to be skiing down the mountain holding a torch, Carolyn?
No. But I did in the Aspen Times Weekly this week, I did a long piece on how much fun winter school used to be.
You also had some full frontal male nudity on
the
cover.
Yeah, we did. So, it's just because times have changed, I think. And, you know, rules come down and the chamber gets involved and then it becomes, you know, chamber-like. But, you know, back in the day, you know, they had a parade where, you know, they had political statements on their floats as for the whatever the issue of the day was. And it was really fun to look back at some of those images. And when I was going through the archive with the Historical Society, almost every cutline photo caption said, here's blah, 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 in whatever float. They appear to have been drinking.
Yeah. Oh, the parades are great. I wish they'd bring that back.
Right.
The parade's gone. Soup school's gone.
Right. But now they have a community bonfire, and they're trying to, you know, rally around that. Canine fashion show. You know?
Win some, you lose some. Thank you so much to my guests, Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, Carolyn Zachariasen, reporter with the Aspen Times, and Roger Merle, columnist with the Aspen Times. You've been listening to Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Allison.
Thanks for having us.